Last one.
So, Marcia?
Yes.
I have his presentation he forwarded to me. You want me to send it to you?
Okay.
He just didn't CC you on it. I don't. Yeah, I guess he didn't realize that Marjorie's going to do orientation. So.
Yeah. Okay.
But he did CC me on it, so I do have it. So I will forward that to you ASAP.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Welcome to Masterclass for November 2nd. Woohoo. We'll go ahead and get started with Michael Montanari. I will turn it over to you.
Okay. Let me see if I can share my screen. Here we go. Can everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Wait, I did not think that would work the first time I tried it. All right. So my masterclass is on AI and quantum computing. Bear with me. So artificial intelligence is the theory and the development of computer systems with the goal of allowing them to perform tasks that normally require human-level intelligence. These tasks include things like speech recognition, visual perception, language translation, even decision making. But the idea is that a computer program that can instantly access a library of information from around the whole world can use that knowledge to help humans solve complex problems and greatly advance mankind's ability to utilize technology that already exists and even create new technology that might be cleaner, more powerful, or more efficient than what we currently have. So AI working hand in hand with humans can greatly speed up problem solving, at least once we figure out all the problems with AI. So AI can assist humans by accelerating research and development, by helping to quickly identify patterns and insights and from large data sets. And it can help by automating repetitive tasks, and that'll free up more time for the human element to focus on more creative or innovative tasks. AI can also be helpful to improve decision making and provide insights from large data sets that will be more accurate and relevant to any issues at hand. AI can even help increase creativity by generating new ideas and designs or by finding solutions to complex problems. And the amount of data that AI could draw on once it can function at a higher level would allow the possible development of personalized medicine and fleets of self-driving cars. So everyone knows that Tesla is already producing models of cars and trucks that can guide themselves fairly well, but they're still kind of lacking in complexity and problem-solving ability. Once we have better perfected AI, they can provide us with driven vehicles in the future that be able to react to accidents in real time, avoiding crashes that a driver who was even mildly distracted by like their kids in the back seat spilled some coffee, got a message, even if they didn't check it on their phones, that could easily distract the driver and cause them to miss vital information that would have them be part of the accident. So AI might even be able to predict traffic patterns and accidents by monitoring the traffic around and the actions of drivers in the cars as they're in traffic. Let me know if I'm going too fast. I get excited. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Yes, we can. Yes.
Yep, we can hear you.
All that was for nothing for a minute there. Okay, so quantum computing is an entirely different way of processing data. It uses the laws of quantum mechanics to solve problems that would be far too complex for the computers that most of us are familiar with. Quantum computers use quantum bits, or qubits, that are a more advanced version of the bits used in most computers today. They can encode far more data than standard bits, and it gives them the ability to perform far more complex calculations than any supercomputer. Even supercomputers in modern times can fail to perform complex calculations because the high number of variables can be overwhelming to them. Quantum physics are how the world operates, though. So a computer that uses the laws of quantum mechanics can offer humanity the best tools to study and understand our planet. And they can handle the large numbers of variables much better and can perform the calculations exponentially faster than any computer in existence currently. AI has already become very popular as one of the most useful inventions in the past decade. And even in the fairly rudimentary form that it currently exists in, it's at least available to the public. With quantum computing, it'll be possible to develop machine learning algorithms to advance our AI capabilities drastically compared to what they are now. And it'll also boost predictive analytics and business intelligence. Classical computers are limited in how far we can push them in terms of performance, but quantum computers will be so far above that level that it'll likely take us years to find their limits, let alone reach them. Companies like Microsoft, Google, and IBM, and other tech giants are all racing to develop these technologies, and nations such as China, the Netherlands, and the UK are all devoting themselves to developing quantum computers. The nation or company that gets them first will have a massive advantage over their neighbors. So we have two technologies being developed almost on a parallel course, and that are slowly drawing closer to each other. The closer they get, the faster this process will occur until we have a combination of the two. Each will be able to help further develop the other until we reach a point where we have intelligent artificial assistants, similar to Jarvis in the Iron Man movies. And these artificial assistants will be capable of being given vague direction of what the user wants, and then being capable of computing how this would happen, any flaws in the plan, and possible ways to solve those problems, and then presenting the plan to the user. In the future, looks like we will see technology start to explode in advancements. And I'm really excited about it. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this lecture.
Thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome.
Anybody have any questions for Michael?
Yes. If you have questions, please hesitate to ask. I am introverted and nervous, so.
I like that. That's funny. All right, Craig, you're up.
Okay, give me 1 second. I'll start my screen, share my screen. All right. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes, we can.
All right. So today I'm going to be going over the understanding of phishing and exploiting humans for cybercrime. So first we'll talk about the different types of phishing, as there are many different types of phishing attacks. But today I'm going to focus on probably like the main four types of phishing. So we have phishing, vishing, whaling, and spear phishing. Phishing is the practice of sending fraudulent communication that appears to come from a legitimate and reputable source, usually through email and text, whereas vishing involves more fraudulent voice messages or calls. Whaling is a common form of spear phishing that targets the top-level business executives and the head of government agencies, whereas spear phishing is more of a targeted, personalized attack aimed at a specific individual. Okay, I think I have my slides on auto, so it's moving faster than I would like to. Let me see if I can stop that. Anyway, phishing. Phishing is one of the most common social engineering techniques. It involves sending a deceptive email messages or website that appears to be from a trusted source, such as a bank, social media platform, or a well-known company. The goal of phishing is usually to trick the recipient of the email into providing sensitive information, such as login credentials, credit card numbers, or personal information. In this picture here, we actually have a real phishing attempt that came from a school. The staff member received this email and was unsure if it was a legit email or not. Luckily, they was able to get in contact with their local IT staff and prove that the email was a fake. But as you can see, it is a generic email where just trying to get the user to send over a large sum of money so personal information of theirs do not get released. And you can tell that this is a phishing attempt due to just nobody was addressed in the email, no signature was left, and how it is a huge bolded message saying ASAP. This is going to be annoying if I can't fix that. What was that? So yeah, during this whole phishing attempt, they was just trying to scare the user into thinking that this is legit email and they need to send money, otherwise their personal contact will get released to the public. Next, phishing, the damages that phishing can cause to a business. Successful phishing attacks can affect the business in numerous ways, including loss of money, loss of intellectual property, damage to reputation, and disruption of operational activities. These effects work together to cause a loss of company value, sometimes irreparable repercussions. Phishing attempts can be spotted by either checking for spelling errors, checking if the email address is valid. In this picture, we have just a generic phishing attempt email where somebody was trying to impersonate a company's boss just to get them to send over an urgent request of money. And well, in this case, an Amazon gift card. And you can tell this is a phishing attempt just by incorrect email address, the amount of urgency sent in the email, no greeting, multiple spelling and grammar errors, and no signature. The next type of phishing we discussing is vishing. Vishing is the type of cybercrime that involves defrauding people over the phone. It is short for voice phishing. In a phishing attack, the attackers use social engineering tactics to convince the victim to provide personal information. The attacker's goals are typically to access financial accounts. Attackers often use a pretext to misrepresent their authority or position in order to trick the victim into compliance. And these stats are all from KeepNet Lab. So we'll go over these real quick, because I found these really, really interesting. So over 59.4 million people in the U.S. fell victim to phishing in 2021. This is an alarming number, underscores the increasing threat of voice phishing in the country. Americans lost $29.8 billion to phishing in 2021, a 49.7% increase from the $19.7 billion in 2020. The average loss per individual was $502 in 2021, up 43% from 2020. The pandemic had affected our health and paved way for scammers. Approximately 59% of Americans received scam calls related to COVID-19 in 2021, a rise from 44% in 2020. Youngsters, particularly those aged 18 through 44, are more susceptible to phishing attacks. Interestingly enough, men seem to be more vulnerable, with 59.4% of phishing victims in 2021 being male. Phishing attempts can be tricky to spot, as the person behind the phishing attempt usually try to scare the person on the phone by using a sense of urgency. A good tip to spot a phishing attempt is to verify the caller's identity. Next, we'll discuss whaling. Whaling is a type of spear phishing attack directed at a high-level executive, where attackers masquerade as legitimate, known, trusted entities and encourage the victim to share highly sensitive information or to send a wire transfer up to a fraudulent account. The goal of wire phishing is to convince victims to transfer a large sum of money to the attacker, steal confidential company data, gain access to networks that can yield much larger ill-gotten gains. Next, we'll go over spear phishing. Spear phishing is a type of phishing campaign that targets a specific person or group and often will include information known to be of interest to the target, such as current events or financial documents. The goal of spear phishing is to acquire sensitive information such as username, passwords, and other personal information. And how spear phishing works is the threat actor usually identifies the target. Usually this can happen over social media platforms such as Instagram or more popular LinkedIn. And after they identify their target, they will send a legitimate looking email to the target. The target will unknowingly open the email containing the virus, and then the hacker will be able to gain access and steal the company's data. Next, we'll go over a real world example of phishing. So this attack recently actually just happened. This was the attack on the MGM Resort in Las Vegas. So the MGM Resort is a hotel slash casino that is located in Las Vegas that was a victim of a phishing and ransomware attack that happened September of this year. So the attack happened by through a social engineering attempt that allowed a threat actor to burrow into the MGM environment and establish a foothold due to common mistakes of password reuse. Additional information was collected from a high-value user's LinkedIn profile, and where their goal was to dupe the help desk into resetting the user's multi-factor authentication in order to gain access into the accounts. So the hackers was able to gain access into the company's Okita account, which is Okita is more like another version of a single sign-on. So you was able to just one password into your Azure environment and get access to all your cloud applications that you might use for the company. And by the time the MGM's incident response team discovered the threat actors, the damage was already done and they was forced to terminate Okita platform. However, the attack wasn't done there, as another group of hackers was called in and installed ransomware onto the MGM servers. And for the full extent of what system was compromised, was data was leaked, and that is still unknown how much data got leaked. In the gaming industry, David Kazatz says that MGM Resorts is losing much as $8.4 million in revenue every day until the servers are back up and running and fixed. Also, another cause of the problem, that the servers were encrypted by the threat actors that hosted thousands of their VMs, where it was supporting hundreds of systems widely used in the industry. This caused chaos for not only the employees, but also the guests staying at the hotel. As application runners on the VMs crashed, hotel room keys no longer worked, dinner reservation systems were down, the point of sale systems were unable to take payment, and guests was unable to check in or out of the hotel. So a little analysis of what happened. The attack on the MGM Resort was a result of ransomware attack. The attack was made possible by a phishing attempt on the help desk and privilege escalation. The attack caused system outages, operational disruption, data breach, and the attack cost the MGM Resort over $100 million, including $10 million in a one-time consulting cleanup fee. Next, we'll look at an example of whaling. For those who like to use Snapchat, this also happened not as recently as the MGM Resort, but this happened back in 2016, where Snapchat had a threat actor pretending to be a high-level executive. And this high-level executive requested an HR member to send out the payroll of current and former employees. Luckily, Snapchat incident response team was on the case, and they was able to stop the minimize the result. They didn't really stop it, but they did minimize it, and they handed this case over to the FBI. And afterwards, they had to provide all current and former members of their work of office 2 years of protection. Next, we'll just take a quick look of how to defend against phishing attacks. Just be cautious when unsolicited requests or for sensitive information. Verify the identity of anybody requesting the sensitive information. Be wary of unexpected or suspicious communications. Educate yourself and your organization about phishing tactics and red flags. Use strong and unique passwords, as well as multi-factor identification. Keep your software and system up to date to prevent exploitation of technical vulnerabilities. Ultimately, awareness, skepticism, and vigilance are key to defending against social engineering attacks. To conclude, all employees should receive training on how to spot different types of phishing attempts. Anyone can be a victim of a phishing attack. Phishing attacks can take advantage of the greatest link, weakest link in cybersecurity, which is humans. Phishing attacks can result in loss of memory, loss of money, credibility, and service outages if successful. Any questions?
No questions. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
My company last year in September was victim of ransomware. They sent a link out and multiple different employees clicked on it. And I work in a huge call center all over the world, and stopped us for about 6 weeks.
Hmm.
It was a big attack. So scary. We do phishing tests and emails from both the client and from our company constantly, trying to make sure that people know what the difference is, right? Testing.
Yeah, because phishing attempts seem so simple, but they could cause a lot of damage to the company.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Craig. Okay, so it looks like I have two. The one that you sent me landed, and then I have one more. Let's see which one. I'm going to go ahead and share Landry's. Give me 1 second. Okay. It's got sound. And Okay. Let me know if you can see the screen.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. We see it.
Okay. Let me know if you can hear this.
I'm going to focus on understanding autonomous
vehicle.
How would it process?
It's really soft though, right? Autonomous vehicle.
That's how he talks.
Okay. Of the vehicle. Let me start it over.
Localization and mapping in autonomous vehicle. Prediction and assessment of risks on the road, security measures and emergency management, real-time adaptation and learning, AI ethic and regulation consideration. Understanding autonomous vehicles. Self-driving vehicles are vehicles capable of navigating and operating without human intervention. These vehicles use a combination of sensors such as camera, radar, GPS, advanced control system, often integrated with artificial intelligence algorithms to perceive the surrounding and make decisions based on them. Self-driving vehicles are becoming more popular these days. Understanding this role of AI is very important. Sensor fusion is a critical process in autonomous vehicle that involves integrating data from multiple sensors. They help to create a comprehensive and accurate representation of this vehicle surrounding. AI-based sensor technique help the vehicle generate real-time understanding its environment. Data processing is important in AI. It includes data cleaning, which involves assuring the integrity of data set, good quality data by identifying missing data, earlier to generate reliable and accurate sensor reading. Data also must be normalized over repetition of data. Scaling help also to avoid bias in data that could impact the accuracy of the fusion process. Data also must be good quality, help to verify the accuracy and reliability of sensor data, including error detection, error correction, and validation check to assure that only high quality data is used for fusion process. Error analysis is help to implement a correction technique to minimize accuracy and assure that the mesh data accuracy represents the real world environment. Perception and understanding of the vehicle environment. AI algorithm enable autonomous vehicle to recognize and interpret various elements of the environment, including other vehicle, pedestrian, or traffic sign. Advanced computing, computer vision, and deep learning technique are used to detect, classify, and track objects, allowing the vehicle to make informed decisions based on its perception of the environment. Object detection and classification. The vehicle can recognize objects on the road. The AI-based computer vision algorithm is used to detect and classify various objects near the vehicle, which may other vehicle pedestrian and distinct different type of object structure. Pedestrian. Algorithm based on deep learning make it possible to detect pedestrian or cyclists to guarantee the safety of road user. Predict the movement and adjust vehicle driving behavior accordingly. Localization and mapping in autonomous vehicles. Localization and mapping are essential components of autonomous vehicle system, enabling vehicle to navigate and operate accurately in complex and dynamic environments. They allow autonomous vehicles to determine a position, create detailed map on the environment. The integration of data from various sensors such as GPS help to accurately determine the position and orientation of the vehicle in relation to its surrounding. AI-based 3D reconstruction. This technique uses that data from deep camera to create detailed and accurate 3D representation, allowing the vehicle to navigate and interact with an environment. Location of difficult environments such as a tunnel or area provided by GPS help mapping capability in various environmental conditions. Prediction and assessment of risk on the road. Predicting and assessing potential risks that may be present on the road is essential for autonomous vehicle systems. They enable vehicles to anticipate and react to potential risk and danger, predict the behavior of the other vehicle or pedestrian. This prediction includes trajectory prediction. The use of AI makes it possible to anticipate the future trajectory and behavior of the other vehicle pedestrian near the autonomous vehicle. Anomaly detection. Anomaly detection algorithm helps identify and classify circumstances of abnormal behavior in the driving environment. Adaptive risk strategies. Integration of adaptive risk mitigation strategy allows the vehicle to dynamically adjust its driving behavior. Security measures and emergency management. AI plays an important role in implementing safety critical systems to deal with unexpected breakdown or emergency and prioritize passenger safety. This measure involves emergency and interventions. A vehicle can react quickly to unforeseen events such as sudden obstacle, sensor failure, or adverse weather condition. Break down and control the system to guarantee the safety of the passenger and the road user. System hacking. Implementing AI-based cybersecurity measures to protect vehicle control system from internal threat and potential hacking, assuring the integrity and security of vehicle operation. Real-time adaptation and learning. The continuous improvement of autonomous vehicle system allowing vehicle to dynamically adjust the driving capability based on real-time data and user feedback. Machine learning technique enable autonomous vehicle to adapt to changing driving condition, changing route, identification of road condition, travel time, traffic congestion, user feedback and preference. Many autonomous cars like Tesla use user feedback and preference to personalize the driving experience and adapt to the user's specific requirements and driving styles, creating personalized driving profile to improve performance, passenger comfort, and satisfaction. Adaptive control system. Self-driving cars have adaptive control system that adjust vehicle control parameters such as steering, acceleration, and braking. Ethical and regulatory concern of AI driving autonomous vehicles. Self-driving car raise complex questions related to decision making in critical situations, attribution of responsibilities, data privacy, and cybersecurity. Among the concerns, we have algorithmic bias. It is important to assure the fair treatment of all road users. Autonomous vehicle data security. it is important that these cars have comprehensive and effective cybersecurity protocol to identify potential vulnerabilities and mitigate risk. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, stop sharing. And turn my volume down. Is that better? All right. Give me 1 second. Matthew, ready?
Yes, I can go.
Okay. You are up.
Yep. Just one little thing. I will ask at the end. I have 2 additional videos I'd like to show, but if we don't have time, just let me know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Let's see here. Oh, gosh. I know how to share my screen. I think. Oh, there it is.
If there's sound, Matthew, make sure you click the share with computer sound.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you might want to stop sharing, and in the same window that you shared on, there's a little toggle switch.
Okay, share. Ah, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's get started here. All right. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes, we can.
All right. I will try my best. Hello and welcome to everyone. Tonight I'll be telling you all about haptic technologies. This presentation was inspired by my manager, John Montserrat, and my HCI professor, T. Witt. So without further ado, let's get physical. So before we start, let's examine an overview of this presentation. We are going to be looking at haptics and why technology getting in your personal space might not be a bad thing. We are going to look at what exactly this technology is. We'll cover a brief history of it, and we'll touch, pun intended, on different types we can encounter. I'll show enhancements they bring to different industries and everyday life, and finally, we'll look at these technologies in action. It is my hope that this presentation will not only give you a better understanding of haptics, but encourage their implementation in future projects or for you to seek them out in your settings and applications to include them into you or a loved one's everyday life. To start, haptics is a pillar of human-computer interaction, or HCI, which is a form of cognitive engineering. Cognitive engineering is ensuring effective and supportive stimulation of human body senses. Visuals, sounds, smells, taste, and touch all play a vital role in helping us to understand the world around us. However, we are focusing on haptics, or the sense of touch, or rather technology touching us back. Haptics is taking the sense of touch and running with it. This seemingly otherworldly tech provides a greater immersion of virtual experiences or augments technology in the real world via our own delicate articulations. When haptics help to bridge the gap of execution and understanding, greater learning potentials are possible. So now let's take a look at haptics and where they got started. One of the earliest examples of haptic feedback was seen in video games. In the 1970s, arcades were witness to 2 significant haptic milestones. These were motocross and Fonz. In these games, a controller would be handlebars of a motorbike, and all collisions and bumps would be simulated to the player through vibrations. Come 1996, Motorola's StarTAC was the very first phone to implement haptics via a silent vibrate mode to let you know you have a phone call without having to have the ringer on. And then in 2006, there was a huge leap with haptics when the FDA approved the first knee and hip surgical assistant robot, which we will touch on later. And then finally, in 2021, we see major entities such as the United States Air Force starting to use virtual reality enhanced with haptics for training recruits to mimic sensations of proposed scenarios they might not be able to easily recreate in a safe fashion. So as you can see, haptics have come quite a long ways. So now let's examine the types of haptics we can encounter and interface with. There are 5 types of haptic interactions: force, vibrotactile, electrotactile, ultrasonic, and thermal. Force applies counteracting forces to simulate the weight or force of an object when interacting with it in a virtual or analog fashion, such as a controller. Vibrotactile, these are the vibrations we feel on our devices, such as a phone giving a slight response when you tap on it, or, like we covered earlier, vibrating while on silent mode. The electrotactile is a type of feedback that stimulates the nerves on our skin via electrodes. And then we have ultrasonic, which is haptic feedback that uses hundreds of ultrasonic sound speakers to resonate at a frequency that can simulate a sense of touch from thin air, essentially making you think there's an object there when there's really not. It's just sound waves. And then finally, we have thermal, which is simulating hot or cold environments. This is primarily done with haptic devices having a sort of water cell and then rapidly heating or cooling those cells. So I'm sure the first thing that comes to many people's minds when we think of haptic technology and what I've shown you so far is virtual reality. So let's talk about that. Here's Bob. Bob is about to enter the digital world, but how many ways can he do this, and how can haptics enhance its experience? Well, it turns out there's quite a few. Nearly every part of our body can be immersed in a virtual environment to create a more authentic experience. For our face, a virtual reality or VR headset allows users to look in different directions using sensors embedded inside, physically tracking our movement. And then haptic gloves, once integrated with the virtual reality, can allow for real-time tracking of your hands in a virtual world. However, through haptics, objects that we can see can actually be manipulated and, more importantly, felt. In the case of the HapX technology brand gloves, if you pick up an object in VR, hundreds of actuators inside the gloves will work to mimic the feel, texture, and density of an object. Similarly, in the legs, we can simulate the type of terrain we are visiting or sensations of that virtual world. For example, the Agile VR leg tracking and haptic feedback system allows for locomotion and the experience of different sensations. These sensations can include moving through water, thick mud, or less wanted experiences like a simulated bullet to the leg. I really hope that last part is toned down. Similarly, we have impact vests on our chest that allow for sensation of impacts and other interactions within a virtual world. Some vests even include speakers or more immersive music or electrotactile haptics to simulate pain. Now, I really don't know why people want to feel pain while they're playing a game, but who am I to judge? Outside of specific experiences I would rather avoid, the capabilities of haptic entertainment feedback look enticing. However, I should note that not many applications embody every single device listed here, and I think it goes without saying that it would cost a pretty penny. Let's move on. So, outside of video games and simulations, haptics have the power to make life easier for everyone. Smart devices like our phones can utilize our sense of touch in various ways, and not just to let us know about incoming messages. The company Tencent has utilized its gaming haptic vibration technology to assist the visually impaired, allowing for more independence to these individuals. The technology pairs with the GPS mobile app and gives particular responses to indicate a turn, to stop, and much more, totaling over 200 unique pulse message responses. Additionally, the same technology has been used to allow those with the visual impairments to text on their phones without having to read the screen. Now, as much as I'd like to go in depth on this more, I believe Tencent themselves do a much better job covering this subject.
Some 2.2 billion people globally have a vision impairment. Most cases are mild, but tens of millions of people are blind or live with severe vision impairment. Instead of sight, they depend on touch and sound to navigate life and stay connected. It's a challenge we've been hard at work addressing to help people with vision impairment live independently in an increasingly digital world. One exciting solution is haptics, which can empower the vision impaired to see. It comes from our game technologies in Peacekeeper Elite. Think of your controller's vibration and uses different pulses to convey information. But we have taken it beyond games. Imagine feeling your way around a city, with vibrations guiding you and translating directions into a tactile language. That's what Tencent Maps does using haptics. Now picture typing not by sight, but by touch. Unique vibrations assigned to each character on your digital keyboard allow accurate input while protecting your privacy. That's Tencent Sogu input method at work. Introducing our industry's first standardized game vibration tactile feedback system. We are opening up our haptics patents to other developers and manufacturers to broaden and accelerate multi-sensory accessibility solutions, not only for the sight impaired, but communities such as the hearing impaired and elderly. Haptics, bringing us closer to an inclusive digital age for everyone.
Pretty neat, right? So
that was awesome.
Not done yet. Now let's look at some fantastic feats this technology plays, especially with haptics and in the vital roles we can see throughout our lives. So enter the surgeon system and bomb disposal robots. Haptics allow for greater and more precise control of mechanical instruments. Extreme care is needed when dealing with delicate situations where human life is at stake. In the images to the right, the top is a robotic surgeon assistant, and the other is a bomb disposal robot. Both require delicate and precise controls and aim to lower the risk to human life. The controls for these machines mimic touch sensations to their operators for performing delicate operations and to help eliminate errors on ourselves, such as our hand shaking. For example, the Mako surgical arm system, which I mentioned previously, has over 700 units in hospitals around the world, allowing surgeons to perform delicate knee and hip surgeries. Through the feedback telling surgeons where they are drilling and the steady surgical arm, results have improved the outcomes of hip and knee surgeries compared to traditional practices. I did find pictures of this, but they're a little too graphic and Halloween's over now. So moving on from a surgeon's scalpel to cutting the blue wire, or was it the red one, we have bomb disposal robots. The purpose of these machines is to remove the human element and allow unmanned operations. The haptic feedback in these bomb disposal robots allows operators to safely feel their way through delicate bomb defusal scenarios with what has been described as human-like agility from onlookers. Again, using technology to pass our delicate articulations to machines. Both of these marvels save lives on the daily. Speaking of saving lives, we cannot put a price tag on human life. Haptics aim to assist with training across various disciplines. These include operations such as mechanics, dentistry, surgery, and various other medical or mechanical experiences or procedures. Analogs are neither cheap nor always available, and human lives should be handled with extreme caution. Therefore, through a clever combination of visuals and haptic resistance feedback, a student can practice and learn in a safe and controlled environment. Moreover, these systems lower the risk to patients' well-being and allow trainers to provide more in-depth feedback based on recordings provided by these systems. Speaking of learning, we can enhance our education through haptics. It's seemingly the future. A study was performed at the Engineering and Science School of Tecnological de Monterrey, Mexico. The study took two groups, a control group and an experimental group. One group learned mechanics and physics traditionally, while the other used an approach that implemented visual haptic simulations. The experimental students could see and experience the mechanics they were learning alongside traditional classwork. This study showed that those in the experimental group had a better understanding and retention of course materials than the control group. Thanks to visual haptic technologies, the course was a literal hands-on experience for these students. This experiment just shows how powerful haptics can be in a learning and training scenario. Feeling sensations in our skin is, oddly enough, a great learning tool. Now, as we are part of the, I believe, Purdue Broiler family, let's look at some cool haptic science that the Purdue engineering team has been up to. The power of touch is stronger than you might think.
K. Move. C. sun, shade. So, row, me.
Kind of crazy, right? So, oops, my apologies. So in closing, as we wrap this up, I hope this presentation has demonstrated how haptic technologies are beneficial not only to entertainment, but various industries, from more immersive virtual experiences, saving lives, impairment assistance, and an overall more intuitive learning experience, haptics has much to offer. Overall, haptics are just another tool in the human-computer interaction toolbox to enhance our experiences with technology. I'm excited to see where this future takes us, and please do not underestimate the power of touch. Thank you. Here's my references. References to images, videos. And if we have time, I do have two videos I could show. Oh. Was there a question, Landon?
Yes. So why don't we just bypass all the physical, go right to the sensory cortex, and develop a full-dive VR MMMO?
Now, as much as I want to make .hexi a thing, you might want to talk to Elon Musk about that.
I will.
But yeah, it would be amazing if we could get to that point, but I feel like there would be so many obstacles, such as dealing with our immune system, and I don't think everyone wants to spend their life on immunosuppressors.
Oh, no, we can bypass it by delta waves and different brain waves. We can go right to the sensory cortex. So this information can actually be directly inputted into the sensory cortex, which is what is necessary for us to perceive physical interactions.
Really?
So this is where this is heading. You're going to get a full dive VR MMO.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll never see the sunlight again.
Yeah, that's a different issue.
Do we have time for two, or at least maybe one more video?
We can go ahead. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay.
Matthew.
All right. So here's another one. This one is showing a type of smart clothes using haptics.
We call these point force cues. And so what that essentially means is it feels almost like a tap as each pouch inflates across the forearm.
We developed haptic wearable textiles. People have been looking at embedding haptics, which is this idea of using the sensation of touch to convey information in wearables and textiles in prior work. But we've gone a step farther with this work by essentially offloading a lot of the control responsibilities to within the textile sheets themselves, using pressurized air instead of electronics.
In some of our prior work, we've shown the benefit of creating wearable haptic devices that can convey cues along the arm. And we do this to provide directional guidance or just to enrich a haptic experience. But we're always constrained to take these off-the-shelf technologies and build them into something wearable that might be rigid or uncomfortable to the user. So with these textile-based systems, it's really just like a piece of clothing. It's very comfortable, and the haptic cues are created organically, like within the materials that are used. And we can create a wide range of different haptic experiences by manipulating the design parameters of the device.
So we have quite a few populations that could really benefit from these haptic textiles. The first and foremost would be the over a billion people with a loss of vision and another billion people with a loss of hearing. They can benefit greatly from the third sense of communication through the sense of touch. Additionally, we can enhance various avenues of entertainment, such as gaming, music, movies, augmented or virtual reality, by incorporating haptic touch.
We first determined the efficacy of the system in the lab, where we got some really nice results, almost 90% accuracy for all responders on average. We then took it to the streets of Houston, where we allowed a user to navigate nearly a mile, both on foot and then also riding on a scooter, where their hands were occupied, but the haptic cues that helped them navigate were delivered through the wearable.
This is another aspect of the textile approach to making wearable devices that's really exciting, is the speed and the rapid fabrication and prototyping that you can do. So you can really iterate ideas quickly and almost, you know, brainstorm in the lab with the devices that you can fabricate. So it's really just limited by your imagination.
All right, and I have one more, which talks about ultrasonics, which I really did not get an opportunity to cover.
We use a small collection of ultrasonic speakers, just speakers that emit sound waves that are too high frequency for you to hear. And we trigger these speakers with very specific time differences between them so that the sound waves from each speaker arrive at the same point at the same time. And because sound waves are just pressure waves moving through the air, at that point, all of the pressure differences add together. You get a very localized point of high pressure, and there's actually enough force generated there to just slightly displace the surface of your skin. We can control that, turn it on and off in order to create a vibration, can create any vibration that your hand's capable of feeling, and we can manipulate and sculpt the acoustic field rather than just creating a point, create a line or a 2D shape or even three-dimensional shapes and objects.
All I had. Thank you.
That was really great. Thank you, Matthew. Okay, I am going to go ahead and present Michael Giles' presentation and get it set up. Let me know if you can hear the audio once I share.
Hello, my name is Michael Giles Jr.
This is way down.
I don't hear anything on my end at all. Hold on.
It's very faint.
Yes. Okay. Okay. There we go. Again, my volume's way up. All right.
Hello, my name is Michael Giles Jr.
That's as loud as I can get it.
Click when you hover over that, click that little mic that's over on the right of it.
Oh.
Okay. Not much better, but.
On data analytics with Python.
Thanks, Marjorie.
There are many different ways to process data and handle data. There are many different tanks, descriptions, and job titles that deal with data handling. The three major titles are data analytics, data analysis, and statistics is a branch of mathematics that deals with processing data for many different reasons. Statistics analyzes data, interprets data, tries to explain data, and more. Because statistics handles data, data analytics cannot exist without it. Statistics is used in data analytics to help identify trends in data, interpret data, explain, and everything else. Mathematical modeling equations and calculations used in statistics to process data are the same used in data analytics. That is why data science majors are required to take statistics as part of their program. Also, data analytics cannot exist without machine learning. Machine learning is a form of artificial intelligence, and it also involves statistical formulas and equations. All of artificial intelligence requires mathematics to function successfully. Machine learning, as a branch of artificial intelligence, uses statistics to machine learn. The most basic mathematics involved in machine learning, statistics, and data analytics include mean, median, and mode. derivatives, variance, standard deviation, linear regression, and ordinary least squares. Mean, median, and mode are measurements of central tendency. Mean calculates the average. Median identifies the value in the center of the data set, ordered from low to high. And mode identifies the value that occurs the most in the data set. Each can be used based on what you're looking for. For example, if you want to search a data set to identify what shoppers bought the most in a given week, you'd use the mode to identify the item. Derivatives are just slopes. The word derivative is just another name for slope. Derivatives identify the rate of change at a given point on a graph. Derivatives are instantaneous, meaning that a line on a graph or a function's rate of change might not be defined to only one derivative. Variance is the calculation of data sets spread from the mean across the mean, which is the average. Variance takes the mean from the data sets and calculates how far the data sets are from the mean. The lower the variance, the closer the data sets are to the mean, and the better chances the predictions will reign true. The higher the variance, the farther the data sets are from the mean and the less likely to be predictable. Variance squares is data set calculations to prevent negative numbers. Standard deviation is the square root of variance. A low standard deviation means that the data is clustered around the mean, and a high standard deviation means the data is spread out. Standard deviation is just like variance, but more accurate. It helps with predictive modeling for decision making. You have to calculate the variance in order to be able to calculate the standard deviation. Linear regression is a regression line model that is used to predict outcomes. Ordinary least square is a linear regression model that calculates the error of a data set, with the goal being to reduce the error as low as possible to make accurate predictions. Python is a high-level programming language. Python has become one of the most used programming languages throughout the world. Benefits of using Python is that it's easy to learn, simplified syntax, Python is free, it has compatible tools for modern technology like artificial intelligence, machine learning, microcontroller programming, and data processing. The compatibility Python offers is amazing. Python allows for us to import libraries to make programming easier. Python is compatible with many different libraries that can be imported to do many different things. Python uses libraries that have built-in functions and algorithms that make programming easy. Python has libraries for data handling that help with calculating the statistics of the data, presenting visual representations with graphs and other imagery of the data, and importing, exporting databases, creating database tables, relational databases, etc. The Python libraries for data analytics include NumPy, Pandas, and Matplotlib. Although these are not the only libraries, they are the most used. NumPy is a Python library that was made to focus on science and engineering. NumPy is the de facto standard for working with numerical data in Python. The benefits of using NumPy are many, such as multi-dimensional arrays and matrix data structures. NumPy is used for creating arrays and matrices. NumPy is used for performing lots of mathematical functions on arrays. NumPy extends Python's range beyond lists, which are limited in what they can do. NumPy is widely used with other libraries like Pandas and Matplotlib. Unlike lists in Python, NumPy requires for all data types to be similar, whereas lists could have strings, integers, and floats all in the same list. NumPy stands for numerical Python, and NumPy is a hybrid array object. NumPy implements linear algebra, discrete mathematics, random number generators, and lots of other mathematical features. Arrays in NumPy are indexed starting at 0 and ending at 1 minus the number given to create the array. The Pandas library was made to focus on real-world data handling. Pandas is a Python library that aims toward being the tool used for practical real-world data analytics. Some benefits from using Pandas are that Pandas is good for real-world data applications. It makes cleaning data easy. Pandas is compatible with most popular database software like data from SQL, Microsoft Excel, and Pandas also plots data, simple plotting. So to import data from an external source software like Excel, you would load the data into Pandas and you would store it into a data frame. If it isn't stored into a data frame, then it'll just showcase the data, but it won't store the data in memory in the program. That means that an entire database will be stored into a single variable, and this is also what makes Python such a great programming language and Pandas such a great programming library for data handling. Panda creates tables out of data that includes rows.
Sorry, guys. I don't know how that happened. Let's see if I can.
Within their public online community, Matplotlib offers us the ability to graph images. Matplotlib offers us the ability to animate our images so that we can see how data interacted over periods of time. Matplotlib also offers 3D plotting, which works for tracking earthquakes and other types of weather. Most of the graphs offered by Matplotlib require meticulous focus and research to familiarize yourself with. For data analytics in a business setting, the majority of Matplotlib's plots would not be needed. Although scatter plots, bar charts, box plots, histograms, pie charts, things of those sorts will be applicable. But learning how to program animated charts or 3D graphs would certainly look good on a resume. Ultimately, each library piggybacks off the other. They each work together to get the job done.
Okay, that looks like that's the end. Here's his references. And there we go. Okay. Let's see. Sonali's not here, correct?
I'm here.
Oh, no. Okay, good. Let me turn this down. Sorry, guys. Okay. You are up.
I'm ready. Is it my turn?
Yes, it's your turn.
Okay.
You're good.
Let me share my screen. Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Optimizing Project Communication and Collaboration in a Virtual Worker Environment. In this presentation, we will explore effective strategies and tools to enhance project communication. Also, it will cover the benefits and challenges of working together in a virtual environment. So now let's unlock the potential of collaboration and digital age. So in any work setting, collaboration and communication are the backbone of progress and success. They represent two sides of the same coin. They need each other to coexist. But when we combine these two, we get collaborative communication, a type of communication that makes it easy to work in team and achieve the certain goals. So project communication can be challenging due to information overload, misinterpretation, and lack of clarity. These issues can be lead to delays, errors, and misunderstanding. To overcome these challenges, it is essential to establish clear communication channels, define roles and responsibility, and promote open, transparent communication throughout the project lifecycle can be easy to make it all the communication. In Oxford Dictionary, communication is defined as like the activity or process of expressing ideas and feeling of giving people information. The same dictionary also defined collaboration as like the act of working with another person or group of people to create or produce something. When we put these two things together, we can get the collaborative communication definition, like the act of sharing information and expressing ideas while working together to achieve common goal. So in the collaboration, we can also say that like a virtual collaboration referred to the process of working together on project or tasks remotely using online tools and communication platforms. It enables individuals from different locations to share ideas, solve problems, and make decisions as if they were in the same room. Virtual collaboration breaks down geographical barriers, allowing team to tap into global talent pool and leverage diverse perspective. So to maximize efficiency and collaboration, employ effective communication strategies. This include active listening, asking clarifying questions, providing regular project updates, and using visual aids to convey information. Encourage open and transparent communication, establish feedback loops, and foster culture of collaboration and knowledge sharing within project team. For example, if we are out for the ice cream parlor party and imagine you and your friends want to decide on the ice cream flavors, but you don't listen to each other. One friend might order chocolate and another order choco chip, which lead to confusion if we didn't pay the attention, right? So also the second example we can get like if someone says, I will get corn, so without checking if you end up like, is it waffle corn or the sugar corn? So we cannot get idea like what he wanted. Similar example, we can also consider like for the regular update. For example, our friend don't know what we are getting. Okay, they might be surprised when we show up our mystery flavor. So if we use our effective communication strategies here, then first key is to listen carefully. Like if someone is saying, I need chocolate, then yeah, we need to listen carefully. Second is like if they are interested in ordering corn, then I should ask like waffle or sugar corn, right? So it will solve the confusion. And third strategy is like update regularly, like update for anything. So this is something like if I needed 2 scoops of the ice cream in my con, then I need to update them. Yeah, I needed 2 scoops. So this is a very normal, like 3 strategies, listen carefully, ask question, and update every day. Other thing, like we also have the lots of advantages for the virtual collaboration. It offers numerous advantages, something like it promotes flexibility and work-life balance by eliminating the need of physical presence. Teams can save time, reduce costs associated with travel, with real-time communication, document sharing, and project management tools. So it will make the collaboration become like seamless. Moreover, virtual collaboration encourages inclusivity and diversity, foster innovation, and enhancing creativity. So while virtual collaboration brings many benefits, but it also presents challenges. So challenges of virtual collaboration. First can be the trust issue. Like building trust and establishing rapport may be more difficult when team members are physically, physically is not present. Additionally, misinterpretation of messages and lack of nonverbal clues can lead to misunderstandings. Overcoming these challenges requires effective communication and adaptability. These challenges can lead to confusion, delays, and decreased productivity. It is essential to address these issues and implement strategies to streamline project communication. So this is the challenges of virtual meetings. So how we can make the communication smooth and how we can establish the communication channel. So leverage project management tools to streamline communication and enhance the collaboration. Tools like task management system, shared document repositories, and real-time messaging platform enable efficient information sharing, document version control, and team coordination. By centralizing project-related communication and documentation, this tool improve efficiency and reduce communication gaps. So define communication protocol and encourage team member to use this design channel for efficient and organized project communication. This is the main key. Other the main key is the building trust in virtual teams. Like meeting are essential aspect of project communication. So we need to schedule the meetings. To maximize efficiency, schedule meetings purposefully, set agendas, and define the clear objective. Limit meeting duration, encourage active participation, and ensure follow-up action are documented. By streamlining meetings, we can avoid unnecessary time wastage and foster productive collaboration. Building trust is vital for virtual teams, so sometimes provide opportunity for team bonding and social interaction can be beneficial. Recognize and appreciate individual contribution. Regularly celebrate achievement to boost the morale. By creating a culture of trust, virtual team can overcome distance and work together more effectively. So culture is also the main key point. There are some challenges, and the main challenges is like time zone challenge. And the second one is the language and cultural barriers. So overcoming time zone challenges, like time zone difference can pose challenges in virtual collaboration. Schedule meetings that accommodate all time zone whenever possible. Utilize shared calendar to determine overlapping working hours. So the shared calendar can be convertible. Like we can use any existing one, or we can use any third party calendar as well. The other thing is prioritize asynchronous communication and document sharing. So if we share the documents, it's a key for the communication. Clearly communicate deadlines and expectation. When it is expected and what we require to deliver. So flexibility and understanding are crucial when working across time zones, ensuring that everyone feels valued and included. Overcoming languages barrier. So in global project, for example, multinational, right? So language and cultural barrier can impair effective communication. To overcome these challenges, use language translation tool, provide clear instruction, and encourage cultural sensitivity. Foster an inclusive environment that values diverse perspective and promote cross-cultural understanding to ensure effective communication and collaboration among team members. For example, if I'm going to describe something, the actual way what I need to ask, or the something that making me confused, there can be the possible that if our first language is not English, then it can be possible that we cannot describe them clearly. So at that time, we should suggest about if they can use their second language. And using second language also, we can, you know, solve this conflict, and we can get the exact information that we are required or we are looking for. So this is the other barrier that we should avoid. Promoting collaboration and engagement. To promote collaboration and engagement, virtual team can leverage online collaboration space and shared virtual whiteboards. So whiteboard is a very useful feature for everyone to describe anything. Encourage active participation by assigning role and responsibilities. So basically the funda is that divide the work. Foster culture of collaboration by recognizing and rewarding teamwork. Encourage collaboration and knowledge sharing among team members. Foster a culture of open communication where ideas and expertise are freely exchanged. Utilize collaboration platform, discussion forum, and virtual workspace to facilitate information sharing and collaborative problem solving. By creating an inclusive and interactive virtual environment, teams can unleash share their collective potentials. Email is commonly used communication tool in project. So email communication is the usually in the organization, this is the main communication that we require to use. Ensure the concise and clear communication by using descriptive subject lines, organizing content with bullet points, and highlighting important information. So practice email inquiries such as responding promptly, avoiding jargon, and using appropriate tone. Effective email communication reduces confusion and facilitates efficient collaboration. Measuring virtual collaboration success. So if we are also here for success, to achieve one goal, right? So we should measure also the virtual collaboration success. So measuring the success of virtual collaboration required the use of key performance indicator, which called KPI, key performance indicator, KPI. So KPI may include productivity metrics, meeting attendance, task completion rates, and team satisfaction surveys. Regularly assess and evaluate the effectiveness of collaboration processes and tools, gather feedback from team member to identify areas for improvement. By measuring success, team can continuously enhance their virtual collaboration practice. So feedback is like we can improve our timeline, we can improve our work environment, we can improve the way that we are working, and it can be useful when we are going to work for the next project. So feedback is really important things. The best practices for virtual collaboration, we can say that to optimize virtual collaboration, there are these 7 to 8 best practices point. First is the establish clear goal and expectations. Second is communication effectively using a combination of synchronized and asynchronized methods. Third is foster trust and open communication. So communication is the key. Choose the right collaboration tools. We should must use all the tools. Promote engagement and collaboration. Manage conflict properly, promptly and constructively. Measure success using relevant KPI. By implementing these practices, virtual teams can unlock their full potential. So if coming to the conclusion, so virtual collaboration has revolutionized the way teams work together. By embracing the power of technology and communication, organization can overcome a geographical barrier and tap into a global network of talent. Successful virtual collaboration requires effective communication, trust building, and use of collaboration tools. By following best practices and continually evaluating performance, virtual team can achieve greater productivity, innovation, and success in the virtual work environment. So yeah, remember, clear and timely communication is the foundation of a well-executed project. That'd be all. Any questions? I'm sorry for the background noise. There are some guests at my home.
Good job. Good job.
I think we need an SOP from this.
other questions, comments? Yeah, I'm trying to follow all these strategies and yeah, doing research on the more the tools so that project communication can be more smoother and we can achieve the goal that decided for our third teams.
Now, you probably said this, but I had to step out for a second. So did you compare this with Robert's rules?
Not yet. I can do.
Because that's what most IRL
okay.
uses Robert's rules of order for conducting meetings. Yes. And I think what you've presented is extremely valuable, and I would love to have an SOP that we could, you know, distribute and people can follow it or not follow it, but at least it would be helpful because I think that would actually make meetings more productive.
Thank you so much. Yeah, will do. Sure.
Did you ever, there is a podcast series by Matt Abraham. He's a Yale professor, I believe, of communication. He does a really good podcast on communication. I don't know if you ever looked into his, but if you like it, might be something to get more. I got a lot of information out of him, too. I've never heard of the Roberts rules. I'll have to look into those.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone who presented. Does anyone think of any questions you have for any of the presenters tonight that you didn't ask previously?
Nope.
Did I miss Michael and Craig?
Yes, you did.
Oh my
yes,
God.
You did. Everybody mm-hmm. presented tonight.
I'm going to have to watch it again.
Yep. One of the things that I love about this is that when Marjorie and I were going through this program, we didn't have this, right? This came about later. And I would have loved to have this when I was an intern. So this is a great forum for you to get that nervousness out, to get that, thing that you wanted to talk about that you haven't been able to anywhere. I just think this is such a wonderful idea and great job, everyone.
Absolutely. Great job.
Marjorie, do you have anything you want to add?
I don't. I think everybody did a great job. I'll go back and check my other two and see how those are going.
Taylor, you have a question?
Because I hate missing any of them.
Did you have a question, Kayla?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
No, ma'am, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Sometimes the hand just goes up, right? Just
auto response.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a great night. And stay warm, because I'm here in Florida, and I hear it's getting cold in other parts of the country, not trying to rub that in or anything. But, you know,
I'm cold.
Yeah, what it is.
You got to be in Florida. So.
In Tallahassee. I'm cold in Tallahassee. Okay? I'm just cold.
It was
40. It was 40 degrees this morning.
Beautiful 31 out when I woke up.
Nice, though.
We're at 28
right now.
Coming
from Minnesota, I do not miss it. So I'm going to let you guys have that.
Coming from Ohio, I don't care. The 40 is much nicer. No snow. No snow.
And the wind. Oh, the wind in Ohio. Oh, yes,
I know.
Don't miss wind that.
The plains of Ohio.
Because there's
same in Iowa.
Cornfields and they're terrible wind.
I know. Horrible.
It doesn't help.
I was going to say Ohio is kind of not flat compared to some of us out west.
I'm from the Northeast. Ohio was flat compared to here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah it's pretty flat.
Central Ohio was pretty flat too. We had a lot of farmland and corn.
I live outside of Columbus.
But you at least have trees.
They had trees.
Not much.
Not many of them.
Yeah.
At least not
there. It looks like the northeast side, when you get much higher up North Ohio, looks like there's woodsy parts out there.
Most of Illinois is flat, Craig.
Yeah.
I went to grad school at University in of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, so for a little while. So I know.
Yeah.
Well, Iowa's flat too. Although somebody will tell me it's not flat, but it's not as bad as Nebraska, but still.
Right. That's true, Matthew. Exactly. They will just run and run because it's so flat. It's just constant.
That's funny. I like that.
You can see, because it's like Florida. It's flat. So you can see forever. You get a good point, you know, especially down central Florida. It's just flat.
But I miss my mountains.
Florida. No mountains. Well, we have one highest spot of Tallahassee, and I drive over it all the time to take my son to work. And it's like the highest spot.
That's not
like,
much.
This is a high spot. Please. I live in North Carolina, in the mountains of North Carolina. I know a high spot.
Yeah.
What's worse is when your you know, tallest tree is a telephone pole.
Yeah. Or a palm tree.
Oh, yeah, that too.
We have the palm trees.
They survive. Yeah.
I mean, I still remember the excitement of my first coconut tree. We don't have those up here.
No.
Yeah, coconut trees and palm trees, you need a fairly stable climate for.
Yeah. Well, coconut trees, you could do a lot of things with it. Crafts, make things, make a game. Yeah,
they hold up good.
Yeah.
Raise coconut crabs.
No.
Oh, those are so good. They're huge.
I don't know what they are.
No, up here in New Hampshire, we got nothing but hills, mountains, and then maple trees, oaks, and pine trees. We got a lot of wind.